Blog Talk Radio.
Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I am your host, Lisa Watson, and tonight we have a special event show planned for you this evening, and I am very thrilled to have you join me. We have a special guest tonight, and we're going to enter his world of intrigue, suspense, and heart-racing adventure as we talk about his new novel, The Fury. My guest is no stranger to dangerous situations. He's been held at knife point, hit by lightning. He shook the cold, sweaty hand of Liberace, and we'll definitely ask him about that later. And he certainly has been born to write thriller novels. To prove the point, this best-selling author's books have been translated into German, Chinese, Turkish, and Slavic, allowing him to correspond with readers around the world. My guest spent 25 years as a newspaper editor, most prominently at the Chicago Sun-Times, before jumping into fiction. He keeps his hand in nonfiction by writing for digital media. An original member of International Thriller Writers, he was the chairman of Thriller Fest Literary Festival in New York City and founding director of its agent-author matching program, Pitch Fest. He's judged the Edgar Thriller, MWA, and St. Martin's Awards and belongs to Mystery Writers of America and the Society of Midland Authors. His latest novel is a sweeping novel of global terrorism endorsed by such literary superstars as Steve Barry, the Rambo creator David Morrell. And so it's my pleasure tonight to welcome Shane Yerke to the show this evening. Welcome, Shane.
Well, thank you, Lisa, for that gracious introduction and for pronouncing my last name right. It's terrific.
I've been practicing.
Very good. Yeah, it's for those who haven't seen it, they've only heard it here on the radio. It's spelled with a G, but it's pronounced with a Y. So it just messes everybody up.
And I was actually on your website a few days ago and kind of read some of the history behind the name. So it was pretty interesting to read more about that and how it got to be Yerke.
Yeah, it's a new website for me. I just put it up about a month ago and for this new book, The Fury. I just decided to put a big Q&A in my smart alecky voice. But just kind of talking about me, the books, life in general, how my name is pronounced, why it didn't come because I was, you know, hit on the head as a child or anything. It's we blame Uncle Otto back in Germany for the mispronunciation.
It's all Uncle Otto's fault.
It is all Uncle Otto's fault, or my sister's, one of the two. I always get to blame somebody. You're an author, you get to blame everybody but yourself for anything.
Exactly. That is exactly how that works. So, Shane, for those that may not know of you, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? And you had someone special in your life that was very instrumental for you in becoming a thriller author to begin with. So tell me more about yourself and tell me more about your inspiration.
I will do that. Thank you. I was born, raised, and still live in the Chicago area. I was raised in a small town south of the city. I worked in Chicago for many years at the Chicago Sun-Times, and I live in Naperville, which is about 30 miles west of the city. So my whole experience in life has been, you know, growing up in and around the Chicago area. So you can hear that probably in my Chicago accent, you know, with the Bears.
Yes.
The Bears and the I want some sausages and beers there. That's, you know, like we used to say on the south side or the far south suburbs, as the case may be where I grew up. I've been in Naperville a long time, which is also home to the fictional Dick Tracy. And we have no resemblance whatsoever except our steely jaw and manly gaze. Seriously, not the creator, but the chief artist of Dick Tracy for like 40 years lives in Naperville. So there's a giant statue of Dick Tracy in front of City Hall, which just cracks me up as a thriller, detective, police, mystery writer. I just love that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been a writer. Since second grade, I've wanted to be a newspaper man. When our teacher showed us a mimeographed copy of the grade school newspaper, and I asked a little bit about it, and I just fell in love with the idea of learning things and writing about it to share with other people and having my name at the top of the story. I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And so I did. So in high school, my senior year of high school, I was editor of the school newspaper, but I was also a paid sports writer for the local weekly newspaper, the Herald. So I covered Lincoln Way High School sports for an entire year. I was paid the princely sum of $30 a month, which I thought was all the money I'd ever need in the whole world, but fortunately I wised up and moved on from that. College at NIU, Northern Illinois University, where I met my wife, Gerald, 40 years ago, which I'll tell you more about in a minute. Thought I would become a sports writer in college, but they didn't have any openings. They said, we have openings in the news department. So that's where I went and fell in love with news writing even more than sports.
Wow.
So I became a newspaper reporter and editor. And my first job out of college was as a newspaper editor in Moline, Illinois, out in the fabulous Quad Cities.
Mm-hmm.
Then after 3 years of that, I moved to Joliet and then got the call to go to the Chicago Sun-Times. And I worked there for many years as an editor in the business section and eventually decided to become a thriller writer.
Wow. That's quite a past.
Yeah, but the reason I did it was twofold. One was I've always liked thriller. I've always loved thrillers, actually, the pulse-pounding, adrenaline-type, you know, mysteries on crack, as I like to call them. There's a mystery in there somewhere, but that's not really the point. The point is the action and the adventure and the car chases and the intrigue and the suspense. You know, I love reading those books, and I grew up reading the Hardy Boys and then switching to Mickey Spillane novels, you know, the hard-boiled Private
mm-hmm.
Eye, and then eventually moved on to Robert P. Parker Spencer, and then into John Sanford's Lucas Davenport, and then into the whole thriller world. So I grew up reading all those and loved it, and I thought, maybe someday I'd like to try writing a thriller novel. So after 25 years in the newspaper business, I had gotten injured at the Sun-Times, an ergonomic injury. We had very bad desks and kitchen table chairs at the time, and it just really messed up my neck and shoulder muscles and tendons. So I took a while off to get medical rehab
mm-hmm.
and was ready to go back to the paper, and my wife looked at me. Her name is Gerald. She said, do you really want to go back to that, or do you want to do something else? And I said, well, we can't afford for me to not go back to the paper because I had more than half the family income, even though we both worked pretty good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
She said, that wasn't my question. What do you want to do? And I was almost 50 at that point. And I said, you know, I really like to try being a thriller writer, but I don't know if I can make any money at it. She says, I don't care about the money. What do you want to do? And that was the third time she asked it. And she got more insistent. I figured, okay, I better be honest. I would
mm-hmm.
like to stay home and write thriller books. I have no idea if it's going to be a success, if I'm going to be any good at it or make any money at it, but I'd like to try it. She said, then let's do that. We'll refinance the mortgage. We'll cut back on some spending. As long as, you know, as long as we can stay in the house, which we could, I want you to follow your passion because you're too good a writer to not try this. I don't want you going to your deathbed saying, gee, I wish I had tried this. So I figured, okay, I'll stay home for a year. I'll give it a shot. If nothing works out, I'll go, you know, get a job or go back to the papers. And the first two manuscripts I wrote didn't go anywhere. They were about religious terrorism in the United States, which mm-hmm. mirrored 9/11, but I wrote those before 9/11. So
right.
the agents I talked to all said, we love your writing style, but the plot is preposterous. Nobody would ever hijack airplanes and slam them into buildings and kill people.
Mm-hmm.
And not, this is the United States. This doesn't happen here. So I was premature.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, after those two, I'm just going to write a straight little cop thriller set in the Chicago suburb of Naperville, where I lived. And because I figured I could always sell just a little cop thriller. And I wrote it and my agent put it out there. Publisher snatched it up, Kensington, and said, this is great. We want to publish this. What other books in the series do you have? And I had just written it as a single book, but I knew a good deal when I saw it, so I just lied and said, "Oh, I've got all
right,
these ideas."
Right, you're like series, no problem.
let me send you tomorrow. Let me send you the synopsis for the next book. And I called my agent. And I said, "Help!" He said, "Just think of an idea real quick, and we'll work around it." And that's what we did. So I turned that into a three book. Police versus serial killers series. They became bestsellers. I won all kinds of awards for the first book and the third book, and became an overnight success after hundreds of rejections from the first two novels and hundreds of sorry kid, love your writing, but this we can't publish this.
Right.
25 years of practice in writing newspapers. I was finally an overnight success.
Awesome.
So from there, I decided I wanted to try a global terrorism thriller. And Kensington doesn't really do those. They're much more, they don't do international stuff at all. And their publication style is much more rigid in the sense that if we're doing a police novel, we want it to be cops versus serial killers. If we're doing X kind of novels, it needs to fit this kind of pigeonhole, which
mm-hmm.
isn't a complaint. It's just, it's their publishing style. It's like every other
right.
publisher has their own way of doing things. So they made an offer because we got along well and they wanted to keep me, but I really wanted to write this book and I didn't want to write it in a style that could be pigeonholed easily.
Right.
So I just said, sorry, I'm going to move on. And my agent found me a publisher in Tantor Media who said, where have we been all my life is exactly the kind of book we want. And they gave me total partnership with cover designs, maps inside, the writing, the whole bit. You know, I worked with their editors directly with their artists and graphics departments. And so the launch is today, and it's out in trade paperback, in ebook, and audiobook. And I've never had an audiobook in my, my first three books never went audio. This one did, and I just fell in love with the whole audiobook process, and the voice actors and all that. So that's what today is about: is launching this book. Big celebration and hometown launch tonight at Anderson's Bookshop in downtown
Naperville.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I know where Anderson's is. Cool.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You used to live around here before you went to warmer climates. Got out in the Chicago winters.
I do miss the snow, though. I really do.
Oh, the snow is great.
I think the first year we moved there, it literally snowed. I think we moved in November of 2001, and it literally snowed from like November to March, and it's like every day or every other day it was snow. It was incredible. I loved it. But yes, snow still on the ground till late March was definitely interesting.
Yeah, it's fun watching the snow like in November, December, maybe January, and then after that it's like, okay, enough of this. I'm tired of shoveling. I'm tired of slipping on the ice and cracking my, you know, my behind on the sidewalk.
Right.
It's I really do like winter. I like cold weather, but you know, when you get to a certain age, it gets to be more of a hassle clearing the snow. But it could be 20 below every day, and I'd be perfectly happy. Just put a park on and go out and walk. But,
I feel sorry for my husband, though, because he had to catch the Metro to Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, sorry, dear. Have a good day.
Have a really good day, dear. Yeah, I did Metro for a while, commuting to the Sun-Times, and then I started driving because the Metro schedule in late mornings and early evenings was a shift I worked was too erratic for me to, you know, get home before 9 or 10 o'clock every night. My wife and I like to have dinner together, discuss the day, but it's really hard to do when you get home at 10 o'clock and she has to get up at 5 to go to her job at Alcatel-Lucent as a project manager. So I did want to, if you don't mind, I want to talk about her for a minute.
Sure.
Some people know, but many don't, that she actually died Monday after a year of metastatic breast cancer. And it was a really dreadful, long, tough fight, which she fought very bravely and really proud of. She showed us how to die with grace, and there's no other way to say it. But the reason I bring her up is her funeral was yesterday, and the book launch is today, and her 60th birthday is also today. So this has been the most surreal week, I think, of my entire life, both the worst lows possible in human life. I mean, in novels, you can have any kind of hideous thing happen. I just lived the hideous thing that, you know, that could happen for two people in love for 40 years, is that she died a very hard death. And her birthday is today on what should be a very happy day for both of us, which is the launch of my next book. So she's the one who actually got me into thriller writing seriously. I was going to, after 25 years in newspapers, I was going to stay at the Sun-Times, but I injured myself. Bad ergonomics, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you still had the old steel case typing
desk
with a typewriter well, and we stuck a computer monitor on there and a keyboard, and they were all at different heights. I sat on a kitchen chair, you know, just no ergonomics, nothing adjustable, and you took dictation from reporters in the field by crooking your head into the telephone on your shoulder. And after years of that, one day my head just wouldn't go back up, literally. I couldn't raise my head. So I managed to get home that night, called in, went to an orthopedic guy the next day, and he said, you're going to have to take quite a long time off of work for us to send you to a rehab center because your muscles and tendons are all fried up there. They're just all pulled out of shape just from this horrible ergonomic setup. So I said, okay, I can do that. So I took a leave. I got all fixed up, ready to go back. My wife said a couple of days before I was going to go back, do you want to go back? I said, well, I need to go back because I have more than half the family income. Even though we both had good, well-paying jobs, it would have been like a 55% pay cut for us. And she said, that wasn't my question. My question is, do you want to go back or do you want to do something else? You've always talked about writing thrillers someday. Is this the someday? And I said,
clearly she knew a lot more than you did, Shane.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was being practical. She was being supportive.
She wanted you to follow your dream, yes.
She did, literally. And they said, well, you know, we can't afford. And she said, no. What do you want to do if money wasn't an object? And I said, stay home, write thriller novels, get published, and hopefully become a bestseller. And she said, then that's exactly what I want you to do, because life is too short to just do the same thing over and over for a paycheck. I got a job. Our mortgage is low. We can handle it if we just, you know, fool around with some of the finances. It'll be tight, but I want this for you. I want you to at least try it. Because I don't want you to go to your deathbed saying, gee, Yeah, I was a newspaper editor for 50 years, but yeah, I really would like to have done this. So I thought about it and I said, okay, you're on. So I wrote a couple of manuscripts that didn't go anywhere, and then the third one was a little crime thriller. And it sold, and it took off, became a bestseller, got some big awards, and turned into a series. And much to my astonishment, people liked it because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just learning how to be a novelist, which is quite different from being a newspaper reporter.
Well, that's true.
Well, newspaper reporter, a long story is 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
For a novel, you've got to come up with 80 to 100,000 words. The story management is completely different. And you're not reporting other people's facts. You're creating your own. It's an entirely different mindset, and I really enjoy it. But there was a steep learning curve, and my editor at my first publisher, bless her, was willing to help me through the learning curve because she saw the same thing Gerald did. She said, "You got something special. I got to work on you and teach you how to do it most efficiently because it's different from newspaper work."
Right.
So I had all these people supporting me and having my back and all my friends and everything, and I went for the first three books, and then now we're up to The Fury, which is my first global big thriller.
So tell us a little bit more about that. Tell us, give us a little synopsis of The Fury and tell us about your main character, Superstition Sue Davis.
Okay.
Tell us about her and where she came from.
Yeah, she's a delight. She's a Chicagoan like me through and through. She married the love of her life from high school. Now I married the love of my life from college, so that's a little different. Mm-hmm. But the book is what happened. Well, in a nutshell, if a grief-blinded cop can't find the man who killed her husband, millions of Americans will die in a nerve gas strike against the U.S. It's a terrorism book, and it's basically about what happens if a narcotics kingpin in Mexico, that's where I said it, got a hold of a bunch of doomsday bombs from the Cold War. What would he do with them? How would he use them to threaten to make money, or would he be psychopathic and just kill a bunch of people, and what would he do with it? And the reason I came up with the story is for years and years ago, I read a series of stories in this little paper called The Daily Pilot in Virginia, and they did a remarkable series about called The Danger Beneath, and it was our secret weapons disposal program during the Cold War of a lot of our old World War II and Cold War, quote, obsolete weapons, nerve gas, VX, radioactive material, bombs, fuses, rockets, missiles, explosives, the whole bit. We just loaded them up. We said, well, we have thermonuclear weapons. We don't need all this old stuff anymore, so let's get rid of it. Well, the way we got rid of things back then was to load them onto old cargo ships, tow them out 5-10 miles from the coast, and detonate it. And they would just sink to the bottom. And the theory was, well, out of sight, out of mind, if we can't see them, the deep seawater will crush them and destroy them. Well, the scientists of the time forgot that Mother Nature doesn't always believe what the scientists say. And to this day, those bombs are still down there live, just waiting for something to detonate them. So occasionally, because of tides and fishing vessels and things, they wash up on the shore and explode and kill people. Commercial fishermen have been killed by nerve gas because they're trawling for fish, and they get a nerve gas bomb up in the net, and they go, what in the heck is, boom, and then the whole crew dies. There have been dredging operations where in the Northeast, like in Maine, homeowners use crushed up clam shells for their driveways instead of gravel. Well, they get them from dredging the clams from, you know, the bay areas of the Atlantic Ocean. And occasionally a little warhead of some sort, either not nuclear, but mustard gas, sarin gas, VX gas, all the deadly poisons of both war, of all the wars in the Cold War period, which are all out there still, get dredged up by mistake. They get crushed with the clam shells dumped into the driveways intact. And Harry the Happy Homeowner was whistling as he'd walk down and get his paper. He says, "What's this piece of metal?" And kicks it, and boom, Harry's dead.
Wow.
That's always fascinated me. And I, you know, I started doing the research for this, and there are thousands and thousands of tons of these things on every coast, Pacific, Atlantic, and Gulf Coast. There are bombs that are in the Mississippi River. There are bombs that are in the Gulf of Mexico. All these big caches that scientists thought nobody could ever get to because they're deep, but they forgot to account for currents and hurricanes and things that churn up the water. So I always have this in the back of my mind. What could I do with this? And then the Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded, and I decided to use that as my event to start the book. What if an oil rig exploded, stirred things up so much on the bottom, which it did, that it released this cache of, you know, death bombs from their underwater graveyard, got into the current and started drifting east toward Mexico? And what if a narcotics guy got a hold of them? And what if he decided to use them to get what he wanted? And then I created Superstition Jones, who was a Chicago cop, very happy in her life and marriage. And her husband was killed by this terrorist, not from the bombs, but just because he was working with the Border Patrol on a temporary assignment down on the Mexico-Arizona border. And he was killed by this guy who turned out to be a terrorist. So my psychological dilemma in the book is Sue has to choose between, I mean, she has a plan to go find this guy and kill him herself because that's who she is. She protects her family. She's one of the Furies from the old Greek, you know, the old Greek mythology of the women who avenge the deaths of their families. She's one of the Furies, which is why I named the book The Fury, because she is one of them. But her moral dilemma is, if I kill this guy and I can do it, we don't know where the bombs are. Somebody else can use them.
Right.
So how do I not kill, but how do I not kill him? I have to avenge my family. So she gets roped in with the FBI and everything to set up a scheme to find the bombs and then do what she wants. So that's the story, really. It's a two-level story. One is what happens with all the stuff that we dumped in the ocean and thought was long gone, but are now weapons of mass destruction. What happens if they get into the wrong hands? And two, on a personal level, what happens to somebody when their spouse dies violently and she has to make a moral choice of, do I avenge my husband and my family, or do I save millions of innocent people from death? She knows what she wants to do, but it's like, what's the right thing to do? And I'm really interested in those kind of stories. So when the deep water went off, I thought, I have my story, and I just started writing it. And Tantor loved it, and that's how it became The Fury.
Awesome. Now, for those of you out there that want to check out Shane's website, you can do so. His website is www.shaneyerke, and I will spell that for you, GERICKE.com. You can definitely check him out there. And also, later on this evening, I will post a podcast of a recap blog for Shane, so you can check it out. So, Shane, what's one of the most memorable things that you have had happen to you so far? You've gotten a lot of great reviews. You've gotten Publishers Weekly saying that your plucky heroine does evoke the spirit of Thomas Harris's Clarice Starling.
Yes, that was very nice.
Slice of Terror, a first-rate cop and psycho novelist, and you've got quotes from Tess Gerritsen, Douglas Preston, Lee
mm-hmm.
Child, and a
yep.
lot of other top thriller authors. So tell us a little bit about how you feel reading quotes like that from such amazing authors about your work.
Oh, I'm just, I never believe it. I mean, the, you know, having been a newspaper reporter, you know, most of my life, I always have a skepticism, you know, that anything people say good about me doesn't really count, but anything bad is, you know, it's really bad. But it's genuine. Yeah, I've been involved with these high-level writers for years because of my work at Thriller Fest and, you know, international thriller writers. So I've met them all. I know some of them are friends. I know most of them. Lee Child, Tess Gerritsen, Doug Preston, they're all terrific people. And you would think that people at that level would be snooty and look down at you and say, no,
mm-hmm.
you can't eat at the grown-up table. But it's been just the opposite in my experience. The most
too.
Warm and gracious people around. And they, when I approach them, you know, we all approach authors, different authors, you know, get blurbs for your book. And I've written them for other authors. Other authors have written them for me. And I've approached some of my favorite authors, including all you've named, and said, would you mind reading my book? And if you like it, offer me a blurb, you know, a cover blurb.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like it, no hard feelings, just tell me. And everybody's been terrific and have liked the books so much that in this book, both David Morrell and Steve Barry both wrote astonishing blurbs. And more to the point, they also helped me. They read the book. They offered some criticism in the form of, you know, you could speed up the action if you just do this little thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried it, and I'm like, yeah, that's going to work great.
Mm-hmm.
And it just supercharged the book, and it was a very small thing. But the fact that, I mean, these guys have insane schedules, and they're multi-million-selling superstars, and they go around the world, and yet they took the however many hours it took for them to read my book and say, and instead of just saying, yeah, Shane, this is great, here's a blurb, they actually
mm-hmm.
said, we're going to write the blurb, but here's something we think you should consider doing. Now, that's
nice.
Asking a lot of a big name to do, and I didn't
mm-hmm.
ask them, they just offered to do it. So that people think well of me in this business is just, it always touches me very deeply.
Now,
so yeah,
Shane,
I'm a writer. I'm a fan of theirs as well as a fellow writer. So I'm tickled to death when they think my stuff is any good.
Well, we're just about out of time, but I do want to give you the opportunity to let listeners know how to get in touch with you.
Well, they can reach me through the website that you mentioned, www.ShaneYerke.com, or if it's easier, The Fury Book, TheFuryBook.com. Or they can reach me through Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, I think I'm on now. But Facebook is my main social media. They can friend me. I've still got plenty of room for friends, and my Shane Yerke book page is limitless. So that would be the easiest way to do it. And I do answer every reader email that I get. Sadly, I may not get to it right away. My wife, my love of my life, and my muse died Monday, and
mm-hmm.
we buried her yesterday. So, like I said before, this has been a very surreal week. But I'm doing my best to keep up with everything and keep up with readers because that's my wife insisted on that. She got me into this business and she said, you go on without me. You show them how good a writer you are and don't cancel stuff. So I says, okay, I will, you know, the show must go on. So that's why I'm here instead of canceling. And that's why I'm going to be at my kickoff book signing tonight. It's in her memory. This is what she wanted. I'm happy to do it because we had a great life together, and I'm going to keep it going a while.
Well, I am certainly glad that you did definitely chat with me this evening, and I know you're going to do well tonight. I know Gerald is very proud and happy, and you finally got, you know, to do what you were meant to do. And I think that
yes.
that's very admirable, and that's a wonderful thing to be able to do. So I am glad you joined me tonight.
Thank you very much. We get one life and try to do the best with it you can, and this is what I'm doing. This was a delight to talk with you.
Oh, thanks a lot, Shane. And you'll definitely have to come on the show to discuss the next book in the series when you get it out. So we'll definitely have you back on the show for that.
Oh, that would be great. And, hey, if you have any cancellations from anyone, you need me last minute, just call. I'm happy to talk about myself anytime you like.
Absolutely.
We all must hustle ourselves to get our books before the public. But I really love this business. I really do.
Awesome. So do I. So, yes, absolutely. You will be my go-to guy.
All right. You got a deal.
Well, Shane, thanks again for joining me, and I'd like to thank our listeners here for joining us tonight at Readers Entertainment Radio for this special event. Don't forget, check out Shane's website, and you can find out more about The Fury. And don't forget, you can check out readersentertainment.com. I'll be adding the recap blog of Shane's show again later this evening. You can definitely stop by, leave a comment about tonight's show. We'd love to hear from you. I am your host, Lisa Watson, saying thanks for joining me. Be inspired and happy reading. Good night, Shane, and good luck tonight.
Good night. I appreciate it, and I'll put your links on my blog and my website so people can find them easily too.
Great. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.